Good morning. On today's programme, Anglophone separatists kill villagers in Cameroon and disruptive passengers on flights to the Canaries on the increase. But first we go to the US, where the state of Iowa will play a pivotal role in narrowing down the field of Republican candidates for next year's presidential election. There's now less than 2 months to go until the Iowa caucus. After being considered a swing state for many years, Iowa has become a Republican stronghold. From Perry, Iowa, H.J. Mai reports.
When people talk about America's heartland, they mean places like Perry, Iowa. The rural community with a population of roughly 8,000 is surrounded by fertile farmland. Perry, like many other Midwestern cities its size, has seen cycles of boom and bust throughout its history. Even though there were earlier settlements in the area, the city got its start when the railroad arrived in 1869. In addition to its railroad ties and its agricultural surroundings, Perry has also a strong manufacturing tradition. Nowadays, its largest employer is a Tyson's food plant on its western outskirts. And the meatpacking industry's reliance on immigrant workers has contributed to Perry's changing makeup over the past three decades. Iowa is a state in which almost 90% of its residents identify as white. But Perry is one of only four communities in the state where Latinos represent roughly one-third of the population. The town, in that sense, is a microcosm of a wider national trend. The U.S. Census Bureau predicts that by 2060, one in four Americans will be of Latino descent. But this demographic change is not welcomed by everyone, including those vying for the Republican presidential nomination. Former President Donald Trump, the current frontrunner, in a recent speech said that he, quote, will begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history, end quote, if he should win re-election to the White House. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis promised to deploy the military to the border, and Vivek Ramaswamy wants to end birth citizenship. This anti-immigrant rhetoric, which took center stage during Trump's first presidential run in 2015, has opened some underlying resentments, including in Perry. Former city council member Eddie Diaz, who has spent most of his life in Perry, said people felt empowered to say blatant racist things. Longtime resident Jim Kavner is among those in the community who believe that the influx of migrants and Latinos has led to increased crime and an economic downturn, even though Perry Police Chief Eric Vaughn disputes those assertions. But tying crime and economic struggles to immigration has become a mainstream talking point within the Republican Party. With the number of illegal crossings along the U.S.-Mexican border reaching record levels, the Republican candidates are unified in portraying themselves as tough on immigration. U.S. President Joe Biden and his administration have taken several steps to combat the issue, with limited success. Biden is currently receiving criticism from the right and left regarding his border policies. The right claims his administration is too lax on the issue, while the left is losing faith in the president's campaign promise that he would reverse Trump-era policies. In Perry, immigration has led some people to leave the community, something Diaz referred to as white flight. But those who stayed have worked hard to keep this small Midwestern city a great place to raise a family. Emily Leslie, the owner of clothing store Backwards Boutique, says the revitalization of downtown is proof that a changing demographic can change things for the better. Latino businesses, including several downtown restaurants, offer a unique experience that is hard to find in other rural communities. But despite all of it, Diaz worries that the election could open old wounds and rifts within Perry and across the country. Jeffrey Fuentes, who was born in Los Angeles but traces his family's roots back to El Salvador, is confident that his community can overcome any incidents that might bubble up. Fuentes owns an auto body shop and says he considers Perry and Iowa his home. And even if some people still have problems with the growing Latino population, he says they simply have to deal with it, because there's no other way. As the country's demographic makeup changes, so will its politics. The Republican Party will have to change its hard anti-immigrant stance in the future, or risk losing part of the American electorate. In next year's election, however, it will be business as usual. And communities like Perry will be tasked with showing support for their fellow community members and neighbors. For World Report, I'm H.J. Mai in Perry, Iowa.
Next, we go to Africa, where at least 25 people have died and several others wounded after an attack in southwest Cameroon. The government of Cameroon has blamed the attack on separatist fighters who have been clamouring for an independent state for the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of the Central African nation. Dorcas Ekupe has more from Maroua.
To go by official sources, the attack that occurred in the village of Egbeko in southwest Cameroon in the early hours of November 6 left 25 persons dead, including a pregnant woman and a 5-year-old child. The separatist fighters also burnt down several houses, while persons from the local population who got wounded were rushed to nearby hospitals. The attack took place in one of the two English-speaking regions of Cameroon. It is seen as the deadliest ever since the crisis started in the two English-speaking regions of the country. Some sources say the attack by unidentified gunmen is believed to be a retaliation from separatist fighters who saw one of theirs killed on the 4th of November 2023. The highest administrative official of the division, Viang Mekala, has assured the local population that security measures will be strengthened. The attack also coincided with the controversial celebration of President Paul Biya's 41 years in power. Though no group has claimed responsibility, the government of Cameroon has attributed the attack on separatist fighters. Cameroon's two English-speaking regions, the Southwest and Northwest, have been suffering from the Anglophone crisis, a crisis that has claimed the lives of over 6,000 Cameroonians. Separatists in the minority English-speaking parts of Cameroon have been fighting to carve out an independent state called Ambazonia since 2016. They want to separate from French Cameroon because of what they term a gross marginalization of the two English-speaking regions in many aspects. One of the areas where they see discrimination was in the occupation of top positions in the country. First, the highest government official, who is an English-speaking Cameroonian in the land, is a prime minister who is ranked the fourth personality. This means after the head of state, there is the president of the Senate and the speaker of the National Assembly, who can easily replace the president of Cameroon. But the fourth personality's chances are slim, and no Anglophone has ever occupied the top job of head of state since the nation gained independence over 60 years ago. Still concerning top positions and before the crisis began, English-speaking Cameroonians complained that the key ministries in the land like defense, finance, interior affairs, higher and basic education were all occupied by Francophones. However, when the crisis escalated in 2018, two key ministerial positions were given to English-speaking Cameroonians, even though the separatists were still not contented with the persons chosen. Also, proponents of the ideology of independence say the English language has been relegated to the background or treated as a second-class language spoken by second-class people. Many important documents were not translated into English before the crisis began, though things have begun to change. A glaring example of the negligence, observers say, is that the head of state addresses the nation in the French language and his message is translated into English for English Cameroonians. Some other ministers grant interviews only in French. And though the two English-speaking regions have a population of about 4 million inhabitants in a country of approximately 27 million inhabitants, the teachers and lawyers who sparked off the crisis say they were vexed by the number of issues with language marginalization on the top of their list. The crisis that has dragged on for 7 years has been punctuated by irregular staying of indoors of persons, students and pupils imposed on the local population, a situation that has dealt a severe blow to the economy. Armed groups have also carried out attacks, kidnappings and killings in the northwest and southwest regions of the predominantly French-speaking Central African nation. The ruling CPDM party that has taken over the two regions with what the populace calls rigged elections have left the main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, SDF, almost powerless. The SDF's stronghold was in the English-speaking regions. The party is also not in favor of a separation but opts for a federation. The government, however, says Cameroon will remain one and indivisible. Human rights groups have both accused the separatist fighters and government forces of committing atrocities in the two English-speaking regions of Cameroon since the conflict began in 2016. For World Report, I'm Dorcas Ekupe in Mara, Cameroon.
And finally, could there be anything worse than being stuck in a metal tube for over 4 hours, flying at 35,000 feet with a drunken, aggressive party taking place in the seats behind you? Well, unfortunately, this kind of behaviour on flights appears to be on the rise, in particular on flights to holiday destinations. From Tenerife, Cliona O'Flynn reports.
These days when I need to fly, if I need to fly, I do consider which flights are least likely to have disruptive passengers on board. If I have a choice, I think early flights might be better, but as I'm generally travelling from Ireland or the UK to the Canary Islands, I'm not always blessed with a huge range of options. Flight rage, air rage, call it what you will, it seems to be on the rise. This year, Tenerife South Airport, Reina Sofia, was listed as the destination airport experiencing the third highest number of issues with unruly passengers in Spain, just behind Palma de Mallorca and Alicante. In tourism here in the Canary Islands, as in most other tourism-dependent destinations, when one talks about statistics, occupancy, bums on seat planes and a big etc., there's still a pre- and post-COVID line. In fact, there was a marked rise in reported unruly in-flight behaviour just after COVID, with mask wearing a frequently reported issue. But even now, with that requirement no longer an issue, too many airplanes carrying holidaymakers are experiencing disruptions. By nationality, in the case of those travelling to Tenerife, it is British followed by German and Spanish, and in most cases alcohol appears to play a large part. And the disruption is more than simply a case of a few loud or drunk fellow travellers, with flights often diverted to nearest airports so offenders can be met by police, causing delays, and there have been physical altercations putting other passengers and crews at risk. Irish travellers have been guilty too. In August, an Irish couple's behaviour caused an Aer Lingus flight from Dublin to Gran Canaria to divert to Galicia. And in fact, the Irish Aviation Authority annual report last year stated that disruptive passengers had now become the second most common safety concern reported by pilots compared to pre-COVID times when they represented the seventh highest risk. The profile of the drunken passenger and tourist is recognised and being targeted too as an unwanted visitor. Recently at the World Travel Market, Adeje's tourism councillor Patricia Paulson said that while the destination welcomed an increase in seat numbers from the UK, they were actively pursuing quality as opposed to quantity tourism, working to dissuade those in search of an alcohol-fuelled holiday in the destination. The Spanish Air Safety and Security Agency, the state body that in Spain ensures civil aviation standards are observed in all aeronautical activity in Spain, has powers to fine offenders for breaches of a Spanish air safety law, with fines for the standard type of breach ranging from around 60 euros to nearly 50,000. Passengers causing flight diversions could also be charged for the cost of that diversion, and airlines may ban them from ever flying with them again. The Independent Union of Cabin Crew for Airline Passengers point out that long-haul flights are more susceptible to disturbances, and this applies to flights to the Canary Islands from Ireland and the UK, which last over 4 hours. Sonia Cano, Spanish crew instructor, points out that they are the ones who have to liaise with troublesome passengers firsthand, and that crews internationally operate under the 1963 Tokyo Convention, which, among other rights, recognises certain powers and immunities of the aircraft commander, who on international flights may restrain any persons she or he has reasonable cause to believe is committing or is about to commit an offence. Sonia says in practice the role of the cabin crew in this regard is to initially attempt to de-escalate any situation likely to cause problems on board. Their main concern is always the safety of all passengers during the flight, she says. So engaging with a passenger who might be problematic is the first step, someone who might be under the influence of alcohol or other substances. And she points out this is often noted by crews as passengers are boarding. One Irish pilot who's worked the island to Canary Island routes and UK European routes too says that the incidence of disruptive passengers is very much on the rise, and the cost to the airlines can often run into the tens of thousands if a flight diversion to remove a passenger is called for. Drink is a primary factor, he says, though stress is another. And in general, he noted, people don't take flying as seriously as they used to. There's a possibility, too, that some budget airlines are looking at not selling alcohol on flights. The money they make on sales is simply not enough to offset the huge potential cost if there is a problem. There's also been a practice in many US airports where duty-free is bagged and tagged and only given to passengers on arrival at their destination. While this would mean more work at point of sale, this pilot feels it would be a workable option. And as for removing all bars from airports, who knows? Certainly he and many others in the industry who have to deal with the consequences feel it's worth considering. For World Report, this is Cliann O'Flynn in the Canary Islands.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Sharon Lynch, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.